guest today. Very excited to have Justin Moses. You may not think you know him. You may know him. You probably ought to. But if you don't, you're going to be amazed at so many things that he does with so many different instruments and singing. Justin has a new album that will come out soon. And then we're going to talk to Justin about what else he's got going on. And we get to talk about all the things that Justin does. You're going to enjoy this a lot. You're going to learn a lot about Justin Moses. And when the album is finally released, we'll get the entire thing for you. There's only a couple cuts available right now. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. This is Justin Moses, Fall Like Rain. There to the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass. You just heard a great cut. Will be the title cut from an album, Fall Like Rain, from my guest today, Justin Moses. Justin Moses is the first time on Unreal Bluegrass. Welcome, and thanks so much for making time.
Well, thanks for having me.
I've been a fan of yours for a long time, although you didn't know it. We talked a little bit about off of the air that your name started popping up everywhere, Justin Moses. And I want to talk about Fall Like Rain, but just as a little bit of a background for the listeners, you were sort of like this. Every time I would get an album, Justin, more often than not, I would get these albums, and I always read who's going to be the side players. And your name kept popping up, and it wasn't like, oh, this instrument. It was every instrument. It was every instrument, and then vocals. And I thought, well, who is this guy? And I really kind of came to grips with you as an artist. And Mac Wiseman, and the album was on Mountain Fever, did an album, I guess his last album. I sang the song, and you were all over that. And I finally asked Mac and Tom Utes at the time. They were on a very long conversation, which would make sense with Mac. There's so much to tell. And they gave me a little bit of flavor of what you were about. So as I see you now, and you're getting ready to release your own album on Mountain Fever, I thought we'd have to talk about this a little bit. So I'm so glad you had time to do it. Let's talk a little bit about how you got to where you were just everywhere. I mean, it's one of those things where you couldn't – Justin Moses became so visible you couldn't ignore him anymore. There's a statement about, you know it's art when you can no longer ignore it. But I know a little bit about you. The audience may not. And this is probably a story that you've told in the past. But let's bring them up to date from Justin Moses learning how to be a musician. And we'll talk about Fall Like Rain, that particular cut, and I'll just kind of lead you through this because I don't know where you got all this skill.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in a musical household. My mom and dad both played some, you know, they played music by ear and mostly in church and stuff like that. My dad played guitar and mom piano. Actually, that's how they met, you know. And so I was always hearing dad sit around and play or something like that. And they exposed me to a lot of gospel music when I was young and that sort of thing. And they always had a show that they watched on Sunday morning that sometimes featured a bluegrass gospel band called the Primitive Quartet. And
sure. They're still active. They're still active. Very good.
Yeah. They're still playing. And I saw the mandolin, and for whatever reason, you know, thought, that looks cool. I think I'd like to do that at 5 years old. And
maybe it was the smallest instrument on the stage.
I think that had a lot to do with it, really. But my parents went in together with my grandparents and my great-grandmother and bought me a mandolin that year. So I turned 6 years old, you know, before I actually got the mandolin, and Dad knew enough about it to show me the first few chords on it, and he showed me the first few tunes I ever learned on it, stuff like that. You know, he could play Amazing Grace and stuff like that on it because he played guitar, and there's enough, you know, crossover to be able to do that. And then he, he knew some musicians in town that that he figured might know a little more, so he took me to a guy named Harley Millsaps for some lessons, and I think I went to him for about 6 or 8 weeks straight, and he would record tunes for me on a cassette recorder, and I would always take them home and have to have them learned by the next time I came back. But you know, the fact that I actually did learn them and showed up, you know, able to somewhat play them, you know, it always made him, want to give me more and more. And so, after that, though, after about 6 or 8 weeks of learning a bunch of tunes and all that, he felt like he had already taught me as much as he could, sort of. And so everything else I ever learned was by ear, pretty much. And I ended up being interested in the different instruments because Dad, being a musician and playing guitar, also liked to trade. You know, he traded instruments and knives and guns and all those things. And if he had a banjo in the house or a dobro, I would always be interested in, that looks cool. I'd love to try that too, you know. So I never really, you know, I mandolin was my first instrument, but I never settled on one, this is going to be my thing. You know, I was always, when I was about 12, I got into bluegrass, and it really intrigued me, but all the instruments intrigued me. You know, I wanted to know how to do all of it and sing the parts too. So I was just always interested in all the aspects.
Okay, let's back up just a little bit. You're 6 years old, you have a mandolin, and you take 6 or 8 lessons or 6 or 8 weeks of lessons.
Yeah.
And so then you kind of have that sound. But where do you learn the fingering, and how do you learn the picking, different, I don't know how you picked it, all kinds of different ways to pick a mandolin, but how did you figure the rest of those things out from what I think must have been a very basic introduction of 6 or 8 weeks? How do you, just by ear, you just hear it?
Yeah, pretty much from there, it was a lot of, when you're first starting to learn things, you know, it helps being a kid too, I think, to have the attention span and the actual time to put into it. But I think I just had the patience with myself to keep trying until something seemed to be working or sounding the way that I thought it should sound. And I worked a lot with cassette players, and then a little later on CDs and everything, just rewinding and rewinding again and playing along with it, rewinding it, playing along with it, just trying to match what I was hearing. You know, it was kind of that was sort of my method, is just trying to learn to do what the people I love to listen to were doing, you know.
And see, that's what a lot of the first generation players did. And I will tell you, I love this term. I was talking to Herb Peterson once, who out on the West Coast and has been involved in every kind of music. And I asked Herb this very question. He said, I was a needle lifter. Now, you weren't using LPs or vinyls,
yeah.
But what he meant was he listened to a passage, pick up the needle, put it back down, listen to that again. And of course, you wear out your albums. But you were dealing with cassette tapes and rewinding those. And then also, to the extent that you could find a certain part on CDs, you were back and forth. Just so the same approach. You're just hearing it and hearing it and hearing and observing it until you can, and listening to it until you can play along with it, I think is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a lot of trial and error. And I remember specifically when I got interested in the banjo, which was around that age of 12 or 13, something like that, I did a lot of just sitting around playing and trying to figure those roles out. And I know that my first draft of thinking I had it wasn't right most of the time, or a lot of the time, and maybe not most of the time, but there was a large percentage of the time that I wasn't right with what I was trying to do. But that process of sitting there, maybe learning to do it wrong, but then listening more and going and figuring out where something wasn't matching up, that really, you know, led me eventually, you know, to the path where I could figure out a lot of other things that, you know, it just takes that work to figure some things out, you know.
You know, and Justin, if you just tune in, I'm talking to Justin Moses. I'm very happy to get the first opportunity to do this on Unreal Bluegrass, and I have been a fan of everything you've been doing. You just, like I said, you just didn't know it. So what I think what you're saying is, and I've heard this discussion also from teachers, really, really good players that teach, they will come back around and say, learn the fretboard.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to me that's maybe what you were doing is in that process, whether you had the correct role, if you're trying to do banjo, or if you had the correct, you were finding those notes on the fretboard so that you knew those so well that even when you did find out maybe you were doing a role not exactly the way Earl did it, doesn't mean you have to do it that way. You already knew where those sounds and where the different notes were on the fretboard. I think that's what's happened.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. And I feel like also the fact that I played mandolin and I played guitar some before that too, because, you know, having a dad that played with me, I was able to observe him and some of the people from around the neighborhood or the town I grew up in also knew Dad as like the person that could give them lessons. And
oh,
so my
great.
Dad gave a handful of lessons. He never did it, you know, when he had other jobs and things, but he just did that sometimes in the afternoons. And there was times where, you know, he was giving somebody a lesson and I was around and I could hear and see what he was doing. And the fact that he was showing them, I was observing all of that and taking it in. And so, that, you know, having learned the mandolin and guitar and the relationship of notes and string placement and all that, well, when I got to the banjo or other instruments, I already had an idea of how it would go, you know, and so I think that's a little bit of a leg up.
Yeah, well, it takes a lot of time. People say, how do you – you may have heard this before. People come and say, well, you just have all that talent, and you have to remind them that it took a lot of time. You may have talent, but it's a lot. You play a lot, you practice a lot, you woodshed a lot, and like you said, when you were very young, it probably was an all-consuming thing for you as you were learning those very basics of sound and using the strings. So it's a great way to get where you are now, which is multi-instrumentalist and a great vocalist. So I'm thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. We opened up the segment with Fall Like Rain, which will be the new album title on Mountain Fever. We don't have a release date yet, but if you wouldn't mind, let's back up and focus on that particular title cut and how that arrived and where you pulled that song in from.
Yeah, so I've been, like you said, we had a little bit of a discussion before we started the show, but I made a couple of other records in the past, and I had been really wanting to record again for the last few years, you know, and asking people for songs and looking for songs and things like that. One of my friends that I was, well, the first real bluegrass band that I ever toured with was a band called Blue Moon Rising.
Good band.
Yeah, so Keith Garrett is one of my good friends, and I had called him up. I know he doesn't write a lot of songs, but he's written some really good songs. And I called him up and asked him, you know, do you have anything, you know, that I could possibly record? And I knew I'd asked him about one particular song that he'd had before that I intended to, you know, record at some point. And he just said, I don't think I have anything really. I hadn't written a lot lately, but there's this Eric Clapton song that I've listened to a lot, and I think it would make a really good bluegrass song and would probably fit you because it has a part that goes really high, and I know you can sing high and all that. And so I went and checked it out, and I thought, yeah, I think that really could make a good bluegrass song.
It's a great version. It's a great bluegrass song the way you do it.
Yeah, so I ended up just kind of laying that to the side. It was probably 2 or 3 years, even beyond when, you know, he had mentioned it, till I actually, you know, had the chance that, you know, Mark called me up from Mountain Fever Records and asked if I'd be interested in recording for him. That was one of the songs that I knew pretty much right away that I would want to put on this record.
On the record, you have a lot of, just as you have joined in other albums and provided your skills, you have a lot of people on this album. I don't want to ignore any of them. I want you to, it doesn't have to be who appeared necessarily on Fall Like Rain, the title cut, but who's pitching in on this album musically?
Yeah, well, this album felt like kind of a dream come true for me in a lot of ways to get to. I've recorded with most everybody that's on the album before, but to have them on my own record was just a dream come true. The core band is sort of me floating around on a few different things, and Sierra, my wife, on mandolin, Barry Bell's on the bass, Brian Sutton and Cody Kilby are the primary guitar players, and I had three of my favorite fiddlers. Stuart Duncan played on a few songs. Mike Cleveland and Jason Carter played on one. And so that's sort of
It's pretty loaded, Justin. That's a superstar group to record with.
Yeah. So that's kind of the core band and a really fun band. And then I was fortunate enough to have Jerry Douglas come in and play dobro on a song. And then I have three guest singers on the record. I've always been a harmony singer primarily, and I sing lead on Fall Like Rain, and there's two other songs on the record that I take the lead on, but I still wanted to showcase some other people singing and my harmony singing with them. So I had Del McCurry come in and sing a song on the record, and Sean Lane sung one with me, and I had Dan Tominski in.
That's a pretty good group to hang out with and record. How long did it take you to put this album together? Well, I know we don't have a release date, but how long were you actually, once you got the concepts, when did you start putting this to recording?
We started recording the week of Thanksgiving last year, so in 2019, and started tracking that week. Actually, I'll back up and say I had recorded a lot of stuff at home that, you know, sometimes when I record at home, I've got decent, you know, stuff to record with, and it's like you get in this in-between stage where you're like, well, does this have a chance to be it or does it not? And so I recorded a couple of parts probably before that, but the main recording started the week of Thanksgiving, and then we just tracked that week. And beyond that, I had to just kind of get people when I could, you know. But I finished up everything, I think, toward the end of January as far as the recording goes. And then, you know, of course, mixing and mastering and everything. And we wrapped that up somewhere around the 1st of March, I think. Okay. So, which in a lot of ways is a quick process.
Yeah,
you know,
is.
A lot of people take a lot longer than that. But for what I knew I was going for, I feel like that it was, you know, it can feel long or short just depending on how you feel on a certain day. You know, I'd had so many ideas of different types of records that I would like to make and still may eventually want to make, that when I finally settled on this sort of idea, you know, it was exciting just to be able to explore that. You know, I think the idea of this record is to make a fun bluegrass record that people can recognize it as that, with, you know, a few little things that, you know, maybe a little off kilter thrown here and there, but for the most part, you know, I just decided, well, this time I think I want to make one that's a little more you know, straight ahead.
Makes sense. You mentioned having the vocal from Dan Tominski, and I know that he sings on the song which we're going to play as we're leaving, Between the Lightning and the Thunder, but you've known Dan for a while. As a matter of fact, you performed on a fine album that Dan did entitled Wheels, and I think that you might want to explain a little bit, maybe introduce the title cut to that to the listening audience, and maybe tell them what you're doing on that. Now Dan's on your album. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. No, I he had been one of my favorite singers from the time I got into bluegrass and first started listening to the Lonesome River Band, you know, the records he was on with them, and then, you know, of course, with Allison's band and everything. And then, you know, I mentioned Blue Moon Rising. I played with them for a few years, and then I played a little bit with Newfound Road, and I'd met Sierra and played some music with her even around that time. But I got the opportunity when Allison did the record with Robert Plant, you know, Dan decided to put together the Dan Tominski Band, and I somehow, I guess, because I had played around some of the same places with Adam and Ron, too, that they thought of me, and I got the call to be in that band, and that was a dream come true for me, because those guys were all heroes of mine.
the tune, which I think you're going to introduce for us, the title cut. And tell the listeners what you're doing on Wheels. We're going to listen to that from the Dan Tominski album with the same title. Then I'll come back and talk to Justin. So don't go anywhere, Justin. I'll come back and talk to you. But what are you doing in this Wheels song that they're going to hear? It's off of Dan Tominski album.
Absolutely. I usually played fiddle in the band, but Ron and I switched on that song. I played banjo and sung the tenor part on Wheels.
Okay, you're talking about Ron Stewart.
Yeah, Ron Stewart.
You guys are kind of like the same. You know, when I first saw Ron with Lynn Morris, and we'll get back to the song, but this tickled me. I'd heard him before. When I first saw him, the Lynn Morris band came out, so it goes back a few years. And here's Ron. He's got this array of instruments laid around him in front of the floor. And I knew him as a banjo player because it's kind of something I have an interest in. And there's the banjo and the fiddle and the guitar, everything. And he plays everything like it's his first instrument, which is kind of what I would use to describe you. If someone had asked me what I knew about Justin as a musician, I would say you play everything you play like it's your first instrument. So Ron, you traded off the fiddle to Ron. You played banjo, and you let him play fiddle on.
No. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know, being in the same band with him, because we did have a lot of fun just kind of training this.
All right.
And doing all those things. So
we'll play then Wheels from that album from Dan Tominski, and then we'll come back and talk to you a little bit about the rest of the album and what you're doing, and then we're going to lead up to Between the Lightning and the Thunder, which has Dan Tominski's voice on it. So hold on. We're going to listen to Wheels.
All right.
There you heard Wheels, which features some fine work from our guest today, Justin Moses. And he was talking about Dan Tominski being on his new album. And particularly, we have the vocal, which you're going to hear before we're finished here today, Between the Lightning and the Thunder. And Justin was saying how he had played on that album and that particular song, Wheels. That was a great album for Dan. You know, when you mentioned when Allison did the thing with Robert Plant, it gave the other members of the band the opportunity to reach out and do different things if they wanted to. And Dan did some splendid stuff, boy, on his own, put together some great things. So I was glad you got to be a part of that. I wouldn't have remembered it until you told me.
Yeah, no, that was a big deal for me, and you know, it was a lot of fun to get to meet those guys and travel around with them and play music. So yeah, I knew that I wanted to have Dan on this new record. Because I had so much fun singing with him on the road and singing with him on that record.
But that was pretty many years ago. I mean, when I mentioned the Mack Wiseman thing, that was around 2017. But Wheels was well before that, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. We made that, I guess, in 2000. We started it in 2007. I guess it came out in 2008, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was a while ago. So it was no trouble for you to get Dan back in to sing with you on this project, and he does a heck of a lead on Between the Lightning and the Thunder. I always ask artists if they want to explain how you pull that song in, where do you get that tune, what made you think about Dan as the vocalist?
Yeah, so that one came to me from Tom Utes, probably around the same time that I'd asked Keith, I'd also asked Tom. Like, Tom's a very prominent songwriter. He writes a lot of songs.
Tom Utes writes songs all day from the moment he wakes up, and they're all great. I think Tom Utes is as good a songwriter as there is in the country. He's been on the show several times, and he just writes great and historical songs. If he gets onto a history binge and he goes back and explores these history things, you just think, wow, this is neat. I'm learning things, and it's a great song.
Yeah, no, I he's become a good friend of mine. We, when I moved to town, I started playing with Ricky Skaggs, and I played banjo with him around 2010. That's when I moved to Nashville and started playing with him. And Mark Fain knew Tom and introduced me to him, and he's become a good friend. And Tom calls me a lot to come over and record on records that Tom makes at his place. And so he's a great guy on top of being a great songwriter and everything. And I checked in with him about getting songs from him, and he sent me a whole bunch, and there's a lot of good songs, and a lot of times, as an artist and the person, you know, thinking about making a record, you hear a lot of songs, and you hear a lot of good songs, and a lot of good songs that maybe just aren't the right fit for you, but you recognize them as good songs anyway. But Between Lightning and Thunder is one that I set aside and honed in on, because I felt like, you know, Tom didn't necessarily interpret it the same way as I did. Like, it was a little slower and everything. I could see where he was going with the tempo and everything, but I had a vision for it being a little faster and more of a bluegrass sound behind it. And that's Tom and Charlie Steffel's tune. So the two of them wrote that. And, yeah, so that was one that after I'd gotten my songs together, I knew that was one that was going to make the record. And then, you know, I knew I wanted Dan on something. So, you know, you get this list of songs and these lists of people that you'd love to have, and you try to figure out how the pieces fit together. And that was one that I looked at, and, you know, you just have to imagine beforehand, like, what would Dan sound like singing this? And it seemed to be, in my mind, something that would work, and I was thrilled with how it turned out.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And that's a single along with The Fall Like Rain that have been released. We're going to play that in just a minute, and then I'll let you get back to your normal day.
Okay.
So I think we're thinking that there will be another single released, maybe, and then maybe we'll get a date for the release of the entire album on Mountain Fever, which will be called Fall Like Rain. Is that pretty safe right now? Is that what we think is going to happen?
Yeah, that's the working plan, yeah. Okay. We're still debating a little bit on the actual date. But, you know, it's complicated because of the state of the world right now and state of touring and everything. So, we're just... Everybody's trying to figure everything out, so you know we're trying to figure that out.
I will tell you this: there are a couple labels do it, and I know that Mountain Fever does it often. I kind of like being on this side of the microphone. I kind of like the singles coming out.
Yeah,
and then you can focus on that single, then another one comes out, and instead of not just for my sake being on this part of the mic, but also for the audience, they get to hear one song, maybe more. Over a period of time, then you release another single, and it's I think it's maybe easier for them to catch. Right now, it's perfect because, like you said, you can't get out, you can't tour, right. You can't sell product at a concert. So I think it's going to be the way of the future. It already is the way of the present now, in some sense. But I think that's a handy way to release music.
Yeah, and it gives it works. I think on all the levels, you know, and for the artist, it gives you a chance to look at your body of work, or you know, in some cases, people will just record singles and put them out, you know.
Right.
But like I've recorded the record, but it gives you a chance to look at it and go, okay, what what's the next day? You know, what's the next song? And it's like releasing little parts of your overall album, the overall idea, you know, like what is the next thing that I would want somebody to absorb. So it's kind of interesting and cool, I think, on all sides.
You know, as an aside, the first person I know that really did that on an extreme level was Tim O'Brien. He released an album entitled Pompadour.
Yeah.
And it had everything from James Brown to whatever Tim can play everything and sing everything, and he really did those one at a time. Without really thinking about releasing them, then he released them all. If you go back and find Pompadour, you'll see that it's all great Tim O'Brien, but they're very, very different types of songs. So, the rest of Fall Like Rain, I'm sorry, the album, so that'll fit into this feel, what the audience is getting from Fall Like Rain, and the tune we're going to play is going to be that that kind of a bluegrass sound, do you think?
Well, I'll say this. There's a lot of different flavors on it. I think that it's a good representation of Fall Like Rain and Between the Lightning and Thunder, but also I did a song on there that I co-wrote with him and with Tom Youth and Peter Cooper called Walking to Lebanon, and it's this it's kind of a song that was my idea and was written off of my trip to London back in 2011, where I got to see like some of the Syrian refugees, or I don't know if they may not have been refugees at the time. They were there trying to bring attention to the war in Syria, or, you know, what was going on there at the time. And so it's, I don't know, this song is, it's very different. It's not a political song at all. It's just a song, more of a story song in a way, but it's definitely got a little bit different flavor. And, okay, you know, I covered a couple of things. And,
okay.
It's six vocal tunes and four instrumental records.
Okay, great. Okay, that's a good way to describe it. Okay. Well, listen, I can't wait till the next single. I can't wait till the full album is released, and maybe when it's out and everybody has it, maybe we can catch up again and fill out the rest of what was released. And then in the interim, Justin Moses, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day. I know you're always working on music and you record things at home. We happen to be at a time when there's not much of, there's no place to go to play. There's very few venues that can do it. But I do appreciate your time greatly. Looking forward to the new album, Fall Like Rain on Mountain Fever. And as we leave, I'm going to play that, the other song we talked about, Between the Lightning and the Thunder, which features Dan Tominski's voice, kind of as a repay back to you for all the great stuff you've done with him. So thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right, I'll talk to you later then.
All right.
See you back.